This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Andrew Kolsky here with Sleep Science Today. Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Denise Rodriguez-Esquivel. She is with the University of New Mexico Hospitals. She's a psychologist, and she's going to be starting a behavioral sleep medicine clinic. And today, we're going to be talking about sleep medications and deprescribing of medications. So, Dr. Rodriguez, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here today with you.
Great. Well, you know, sleep medications is a very big topic out there because so many people are using them or, you know, believe that it's their only option for dealing with sleep issues. And there's actually a whole lot more to it and maybe some pros and cons of medications as well, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. It's also the most accessible way to address sleep concerns when they arise.
Which I guess is why people just kind of choose that as their first choice.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so let's kind of open up the conversation here. So why don't we start off with what types of issues do people have that lead them to even think about taking sleep medications in the first place?
Well, insomnia is an incredibly common problem in the U.S. and throughout the world, and so it's not uncommon for folks to want to try to resolve it. Most of us feel not great, but like we can tolerate a bad night or two of sleep. But especially when folks start to encounter situations where they've had multiple nights of bad sleep, some folks can really just reach for whatever is out there to try to get themselves sleeping better. And so for some folks, that might mean running to their local drugstore and purchasing over-the-counter medications. But for other folks, it might mean going to their primary care provider and asking for a prescription for a medication that's going to help.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're talking about insomnia, which is certainly something that is a very common thing that we hear about a lot. Are there other sleep disorders that people also, you know, kind of choose the medication route when maybe there are other options? Or is insomnia really the main one?
I think insomnia is the primary one, but I also sometimes see this arising with folks who have circadian rhythm disorders, who are trying to, especially for the folks who are sleep phase delayed, who are night owls, who are trying to make themselves go to sleep a lot earlier than maybe what their own biological rhythm is asking of them. So they essentially use sleep medications to try to knock themselves out so that they can wake up at the time that they wish to be awake.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit more about that? So if I was having trouble sleeping, how would I know whether I'm looking at an insomnia type of issue or maybe a circadian rhythm type of issue? What would it look like?
Yeah, I think there's a subtle difference. And I think, you know, talking to some of my sleep colleagues, we often have this discussion about, like, are folks truly sleep phase delayed Or are we just in a 24-hour world that kind of keeps us awake and makes us feel like maybe we are night owls because it's hard to put down the things that we need to do or want to do at a respectable time to get ourselves into bed? But typically when we're talking about insomnia, what we're really talking about is even though you're giving yourself the opportunity for sleep, you're finding it hard to fall asleep and or stay asleep and or waking up too early, or just generally reporting unrefreshing sleep. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a very subtle difference that we often see, especially with folks who are sleep phase delayed, those night owls. And usually with the night owls, what I tend to see is that if they try to go to bed too early, it takes them a really long time to fall asleep. But once they fall asleep, they can sleep very soundly and then have a hard time waking up at a designated hour. And so a very subtle difference, I think. But what we're finding is, you know, if folks can, you know, do some good things with dimming lights and getting that in place before bed, typically some of that might fall away for folks who are not true night owls. True night owls, it doesn't matter. They will go to bed just at a super late hour. Mm-hmm. You know, with some of the night owls I've worked with, you know, I can think of one who was a university professor who just couldn't get to sleep before 3 a.m. and her sleep schedule was 3 to 11 a.m. So on the surface, it could have looked like she had insomnia, because if she tried to go to bed at midnight, she just wasn't falling asleep until 3 a.m. But once she fell asleep at 3, she could sleep very soundly until 11 a.m.
Wow. So I guess that could be, it could be a little challenging to figure out if you're trying to decide whether you have insomnia, like you said, having trouble falling asleep, or if you truly are not having trouble falling asleep, you just fall asleep later than other people. And I guess that can be a real challenge if you have a job that requires you to be up early and you're a night owl and you've got this circadian rhythm that keeps you, you know, sleeping later. What do people do about that? Is that something they're going to look at medications for?
They might look at medications. Usually we try to address it with a combination of light exposure and sometimes with melatonin. Mm-hmm. But that tends to be a pretty rare case. You know, usually what we are talking about for the vast majority of folks, we're talking about prescribing medications, is those insomnia cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just out of curiosity, is it possible for someone to have both insomnia and a circadian rhythm disorder?
100% is possible.
Wow. That could be kind of confusing to figure out, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely. I've definitely worked with folks who have had the combination, who go to sleep very, very late, but then have very broken up, very choppy sleep, and definitely worked on improving both.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So going back to insomnia, where we're talking about some of the most common things would be either trouble falling asleep or trouble staying asleep. How about those two? Are there medications that people can use for that? Are there different medications depending on whether it's one or the other? And give us a sort of a general idea of what types of medications, what do they do, what's available over the counter, because there's a lot of different things out there.
There are, and there are medications that do seem to target falling asleep better, more so than staying asleep. But regardless of what that medication might be, whatever you're looking at, for the vast majority of those medications, they're intended for short-term use. You know, I often am providing that education for the patients that I see who come in and they tell me, you know, they've been on a medication, on a Z medication, like Zolpidem, like Ambien, for 10, 20, or 30 years, when the manufacturer website recommends a short course of this medication. I believe it's somewhere between 3 and 6 weeks maximum that you should be on a medication like this.
Wow.
You know, Zolpidem is one of those medications that I think really is good at helping people to fall asleep. The other thing that I tend to see is other medications like Sonata being better at helping people to stay asleep throughout the night. Mm-hmm. But regardless, like I said, all of these are intended for short-term use for the most part.
Wow. So, you know, a few weeks versus actually using it for decades, it sounds like. What I'm baffled in terms of, because these are prescription medications, so that means there has to be a doctor who's giving a prescription. What goes on in the medical community if the doctor knows that this is supposed to be for short-term use, but they also know their patient's been using it for 10 years or more? What's going on there?
Yeah. So I'm going to, you know, talk about this as a behavioral sleep medicine specialist, right? Mm-hmm. I know that often what gets a lot of folks into trouble when they have a period of acute insomnia that's going to turn into chronic insomnia is that they start to engage in maladaptive behaviors that is going to turn that from an acute insomnia to a chronic insomnia. Just to give you an idea of what some of those things are, the classic thing that everybody does when they have insomnia is they start to recognize that they're not getting enough sleep. So the instinct that we would all have is, okay, well, I'm going to spend more time in bed to try to catch up on all the sleep that I'm not getting. So I'm going to take naps. I'm going to go to bed earlier. I'm going to stay in bed later. And what we know is that when people engage in that behavior of spending more time in bed, they wind up fragmenting, breaking up their sleep a whole lot more. So you do get the sleep that you're missing. You just start getting it in broken up chunks over all that time that you're spending in bed. And so then it feels like you're experiencing more and more broken up sleep. So what these medications do is, in the short term, yeah, they can make you feel a little bit sleepier than usual and can make you fall asleep. But if you're still engaging in that behavior, spending too much time in bed, you're not tackling the root problem of what's feeding into the insomnia that someone is experiencing. And so a lot of providers aren't going to give patients that message of like, hey, I'm going to give you this medication, but really you're going to limit your time in bed to these 7 or 8 hours. And if you limit your time in bed to these 7, 8 hours, and you're consistent with your sleep schedule and you take your medication, you'll be able to find that over time you can withdraw that medication and your sleep will kind of reemerge to what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's, I can't tell you, you know, how many, because it's almost all patients that I speak with. You know, they tell me when they're talking about insomnia, it's like, well, you know, I got into bed, but I just knew it was going to be one of those nights where I couldn't sleep. So I laid there and I tried to go to sleep. And I always say to them, what does try to go to sleep mean? Because to me, try to go to sleep means you're sitting there worrying about the fact that you're not sleeping, saying to yourself, oh my God, I really need to get some sleep, which raises your anxiety, which makes it harder to sleep. And then you get in this anxiety loop that just makes it impossible to sleep.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And you just crank up that anxiety, and that's just opposed to the idea of what sleep is, which is rest, relaxation. So you're already kind of fighting against yourself by trying to go to sleep, as you've mentioned. The other issue that I tend to see with folks with the way that sleep medications are prescribed is that most prescribers will say, take this medication at night, take this before sleep. And if you think about that, that's a very vague way to tell someone to take a medication versus if you actually look at what's written in you know, the manufacturer's instructions, they'll have very specific ways to take this medication, right? So I think Zolpidem is one of those medications that you should take when you are in bed. Other medications should be taken 30 minutes before you're intending to fall asleep. And the issue with also that instruction is the fact that for a lot of folks is that when they're wanting to go to sleep or when they're actually going to be falling asleep.
Right.
And so the metaphor that we often use to kind of help people think about the right time to take a medication, the metaphor that I love to use with folks is that of pushing someone on a swing. And if you've ever pushed someone on a swing, you know that you cannot give that push at any point on that trajectory of that arc, right? Because if that person is coming down to you and you try to push, you're going to create a crash.
Right.
It's when the person's moving away from you that you give the push to help kind of give them that extra height.
Right.
And that, I feel, is often what happens with sleep medications. patients will take the medication when they're actually too awake, and they create that crash of being too awake but giving themselves a sedating medication. And so they're not actually able to fall asleep. The right time to take that medication is when you're starting to feel a little bit of your own natural sleepiness on board, and then giving yourself that push up and over into sleep.
Wow.
And this is super challenging with a lot of folks who struggle with chronic insomnia, because I'm sure you've had this experience of folks who say, I don't even know what sleepy feels like anymore. Like, I've lost that feeling or that sensation.
Right.
So being able to use that metaphor in coordination with a restricted or compressed sleep schedule, right? Giving someone a prescribed time in bed, being consistent with that time in bed over time, you and I know that that natural sleepiness will be on board. And that's kind of what we're trying to work with, and where sleep medications might be helpful for some folks to help them kind of get that experience of sleepiness. But for a lot of folks, they're just completely mistiming when they're taking that medication and just actually crashing into their own wakefulness drive, which is still present.
Right. Wow. That I've never heard anybody describe it that way. And it's really, you know, it makes a lot of sense. That could be really helpful. But let me stop us.
Because that I got that metaphor from Michael Grander, and I want to make sure, I don't know who he got it from, but I just want to make sure folks know.
Perfect. Well, let me stop us real quick for a commercial break, and we'll come back and maybe we can talk about a specific case as an example. So we'll be back in just a minute on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right, we are back on Sleep Science Today. We're talking about sleep medications with Dr. Rodriguez. And I wonder if you have a particular case example that you can share with us to really exemplify what's going on when someone starts medications and isn't really kind of watching what's happening.
Yeah, you know, I want to go back to that particular kind of swing example that I gave. A lot of folks will mistime the timing that they are taking a medication, and then will extrapolate from that that this medication does not work, or that I have to take more of this medication to get the desired effect.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you know you take a medication, you wait half an hour, it's not working, you take a little bit more of that medication, it's not working, you take a little bit more of that medication half an hour later, and now you're sleepy, you might then say the correct dose for me is triple what was prescribed versus maybe the right dose for me is taken later at night. And so this is often one of those places where a lot of folks will get into trouble, is that they'll start taking a medication, increase the dose, or start taking multiple agents to try to achieve sleep. And so I do have a case in mind of a woman that I was working with who, You know, I did have some medical issues, some chronic pain, some neuropathic pain, some muscular pain. And so she had been prescribed cyclobenzaprine, I believe that's what it was, for some pain. And then that medication was taken away from her for good reason. I think she was kind of complaining of some cognitive concerns. But of course, when that medication was taken away, she had this experience of insomnia. Mm-hmm. And so a provider saw that she was having both pain and insomnia and prescribed gabapentin. And so the patient continued to express concerns about both of those conditions, and that dose of gabapentin was just continuously increased. And then the patient just kind of complained of feeling unrefreshed about her sleep. And so then that provider also wound up adding in some trazodone, which is a pretty common medication that we see prescribed for sleep. It's not actually a sleep medication. It's a not great antidepressant, and it's also a not great sleep medication. But a lot of primary care providers like prescribing it, especially for older individuals, because it feels safer than prescribing, you know, some of the Z meds, some of the medications that are intended for sleep. Mm-hmm. So then this patient wound up starting to take trazodone. On their own, this patient was also taking over-the-counter PM medications, melatonin, ashwagandha. And so over time, this woman started to have cognitive complaints and actually presented to a memory clinic saying, you know, I'm pretty sure that I'm starting to show signs of dementia or an Alzheimer's process. Wow. And when evaluated by a neuropsychologist, the neuropsychologist said, actually, I don't see that. I think it's all of this medication that you're taking for sleep.
Wow.
I think that's a really clear example of how, you know, folks who are really struggling with sleep will just start to take more and more, trying to kind of combat that rather. And again, because these medications, these supplements are easily available, they'll just go to a drugstore and pick up more of some of these items.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I've been to the drugstores, and, you know, just because of my own interest, I look at the sleep medications that are available, and I mean the over-the-counter things. Mm-hmm. And the number of different brands and dosages and, you know, claims, it's becoming sort of an industry. And, you know, when I talk to patients, you know, they'll tell me, well, you know, I tried taking melatonin, and then I took more, and then I take, you know, all these different things, ashwagandha and so on and so forth. And then they start adding in CBD, and then they add in a glass of wine. And they're doing all these things sort of thinking that an external thing is going to cure their insomnia rather than putting any thought or attention into, well, why do I have insomnia in the first place?
Right.
So,
right. And I think it doesn't help too that for the most part, if you did want to engage in some sort of behavioral or lifestyle change and you go and you look online, the vast majority of what you're going to find is sleep hygiene recommendations. And, you know, I think it's not unusual to have someone who's presenting in the behavioral sleep medicine clinic who says, I've done all the behavioral things because they're following sleep hygiene recommendations. And to be able to provide that information, that feedback of like, hey, I know that you're doing that, but and that's all good things to do, but let's really think about what that word hygiene means. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about hand hygiene, like we talked about during COVID at end, you know, is the fact that when we're washing our hands, we're preventing the possibility that we are going to be developing or that we are going to contract something contagious like COVID or a cold or a flu. Mm-hmm. So sleep hygiene is kind of the same thing. Those are the behaviors to engage in that will keep you from potentially developing a sleep problem. But once you've already got the sleep problem, just like with hand hygiene is not going to make that cold go away.
Right.
Sleep hygiene does not make your sleep problem go away. So you really do need to think about, okay, you've now gone beyond. What more do you need? And there's more aggressive treatments beyond sleep hygiene.
Mm-hmm. So just for the benefit of the audience, can you give us some examples of the sleep hygiene techniques that people may use?
Sure. So this might be, you know, keeping your bedroom dark, and cool, keeping a regular sleep-wake schedule, not exercising too close to bedtime, not having alcohol or nicotine too close to your bedtime. So these are all, common sense items that as we think about it, those things do make sense.
Right, right. Yeah, and I just sort of one comment from me. So we talk about a regular sleep-wake schedule, which is important, but... Yes. So if somebody says, okay, well, I'm going to decide that I'm going to get into bed at 10 p.m. every night, which is good for a regular schedule. But then they say, and when I get into bed, I'm laying there for an hour on my phone, scrolling through social media because I'm just not tired yet. And then I'm just worried that I'm not going to get asleep. So picking a regular schedule is important, but picking the right schedule is also important, right?
Right. My favorite story to this point is I had a woman who came in and said, I always keep a regular sleep schedule. I go to bed at 7 p.m. and I wake up at 7 a.m. And I was like, who is sleeping for 12 hours? I mean, those folks do exist, but I don't think it's you. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it wasn't. But she was very proud of the fact that she was very consistent with her sleep schedule.
Wow. But that's, so, to your point that sleep hygiene is important and it's mm-hmm. good, but it has to be applied appropriately as well. Right. So, it's no secret that a lot of people, maybe let's say sort of 50 plus years old, tend to have certain sleep issues. Mm-hmm. There's also... challenges as we get older because our bodies change and our, muscles and synapses and everything, change. So when we talk about deprescribing, so why would we want to deprescribe and what are the dangers of being on the medications that people need to be aware of?
Sure. So I think a lot of the folks, I'm really fortunate that so many of the folks that I get to meet are folks who want to stop their medications. Mm-hmm. So these are folks who are saying, I've been on this medication for years. I've heard that it's not great for me. I'd like to stop. Another situation that I often find for folks is that either their provider or their insurance company is saying, I'm not prescribing this or it's unsafe for you to have this medication. So certainly with some medications, after a certain age, it is not prescribed or those doses are reduced. And mm-hmm. that can be a hard transition for a lot of folks to suddenly go from one dosage of a medication to drop it. But again, something that we can be very helpful at in behavioral sleep medication or behavioral sleep medicine, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the clearest reasons that we know for folks to want to deprescribe is we know that long-term use, or at least the research indicates that long-term use of many of these medications have been linked to memory loss and dementia. And for a lot of folks, that's a big enough scare to say like, yeah, I'd really like to consider stopping or reducing these medications. Mm-hmm. The other thing too, especially as we get into older ages, is we know that some of these medications do increase the risk of falls. And, it happens every so often that there will be a patient who is 65 plus, 70 plus, who shows up to clinic with a black eye because, they got up in the middle of the night to go to use the bathroom and they slipped and they fell. They were unsteady on their feet because they were very much feeling the effects of the medication. Mm-hmm. So it's not a super common thing, but it does happen. And I think for a lot of folks, it's that really scary realization of like, oh, that next fall could mean a broken hip, a broken bone. And as we get older, that's a really risky thing to have to experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see that's, one of the things that I always talk with my patients about, especially if they tell me that they're starting to have mobility issues, for example, the fear that I always have is number one, I picture someone who has a bed and it's on a tile floor or a wood floor. And then I picture them putting a little throw rug so that when they step out of bed, they're not stepping on the cold floor or something. But a lot of those things have no traction on them and they just slide right out from under you and it's a fall waiting to happen. So I always tell them, do something about that. Don't have something that can slip there. I also tell them, it's important to keep a small flashlight by your bed, because if you wake up in the middle of the evening to use the bathroom, you don't want to turn on all the lights in the room, because that's going to be a pretty big shock to the system. But having a little flashlight gives you the light that you need, so you don't bump your toe, into something, and that you can safely get in and out of bed into the bathroom. And any other tips or things that you have for patients that you use?
Yeah, I mean, I think in addition to flashlights, even night lights, I think that's another great way to kind of illuminate a room at night without it being flooded with light. I think if you know that you're unsteady on your feet, having any kind of mobility aid, whether that's a walker or a cane, and especially for folks who use those things during the day, like, yes, absolutely have them at night. It's okay to also just have them at night, even if you're not using them during the day, just to make sure that you can stay on your feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I think the last thing you want is a broken bone, because now you're into a whole other set of problems and pain medications. And you just, if you can avoid it, absolutely avoid it. So let me stop us here again for another commercial break, and then let's come back and talk about how to actually do the de-prescribing and what that looks like. So we will be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, welcome back. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Dr. Rodriguez about de-prescribing and sleep medications. So, you know, okay, we've talked about what types of issues people have that lead to using medication. We've talked about the fact that medications are generally made for short term, but may be being used long term. There's dangers, you know, for people if they're on medications or too many medications. So someone comes into you and they say, I want to get off these meds, but I want to be able to sleep. What do you do?
So this is my process, and I recognize there's lots of ways to tackle this issue, but this is the way that I prefer. So one of the first things I do when I meet with someone who's interested in deprescribing is I do an assessment of their sleep. I have them log or document their sleep and sleep diaries, sleep logs. And first of all, I just try to assess, do they still have insomnia? You'd be surprised how many folks are on long-term sleep medications and still, when we look at their sleep, have insomnia. They still have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. So if insomnia is present, the first thing I'll do is I'll tackle the insomnia. Let's get your sleep looking a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I like to take a gradual dose reduction approach, which just means that over the course of therapy with me, we gradually reduce the dose of the whatever medication supplement that person might be taking. Mm-hmm. As much as possible, I try to partner up with prescribing providers, and that has worked really well. And I just communicate with them like, hey, we're going to get this person off of this medication or reduce this medication, but let's try to move at the patient's pace. Often when folks are trying to stop a medication, In some instances, there have been folks who try to give up a medication cold turkey, just suddenly just stop using it. Mm-hmm. And usually what happens in that situation is you're going to experience rebound insomnia, at the very least on that first night. But for a lot of folks, that's intimidating enough to have that night of insomnia that they say like, oh, obviously I need this medication. I have to continue taking it. And that's really not what it is. It's just that the body's trying to adjust to the effect of not having that medication on board.
Right.
So usually what I'll do is, like I said, I'll address that person's insomnia first. Once that seems to be under control, I'll work with the patient to identify what's a reasonable reduction that we can make in your medication. And I know that some of the literature recommends, you know, reducing the medication between 10 and 25%, but I really do try to work with patients wherever they are at.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had patients who say, you know, like, hey, yes, I'm ready to try this. I'm going to cut the dose of my medication in half and we're going to go from there. I've had other folks who are so worried about what effect reducing their medication is going to have that they'll say, you know, I only feel like I might be able to reduce my dose one night this week and just to see what happens. And so I'll say, fine, you know, like if you feel like you can only try reducing your dose one night this week, let's try it. So let's pick a night where there's nothing much going to happen the following day and let's see what happens. That doesn't tend to happen, but for a lot of folks who do have some anxiety overlay or have had really bad insomnia in their histories, it makes the process a bit approachable. And I think they appreciate the fact that I'm willing to work with them where they are at.
Mm-hmm.
And once they see that I'm kind of willing to work with them, they're often able to kind of come along with me to see as we kind of continue reducing dosages. So, you know, I've tried lots of different things with folks based on where they're at to get them to start to reduce the medication.
Wow.
The other thing I will add is that it's not unusual that when folks reduce the medication, that again, some insomnia kind of rears back up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of that is because of a withdrawal effect, but more often than not, I feel like it's kind of just a fearfulness, right? This anxiety, this even just watchfulness of, I know that I've taken half my usual dose, and now I want to observe what happens, and that extra observation just kind of makes it so that their sleep is altered that night.
Mm-hmm.
And just normalizing that experience. And so I've been lucky enough that I've been able to work with folks for, you know, extended amounts of time to kind of help them walk down some of those dosages of medications. But I've also worked with folks who have been on very high dosages or multiple agents for sleep to try to reduce that number and reduce those dosages.
Yeah, yeah. That was exactly what I was going to be asking you next, which is, you know, if someone's been on a sleep medication for years and years and years, and all of a sudden we're talking about reducing it, stopping it, changing it, whatever it mm-hmm. may be, the anxiety that they may have in terms of the expectation that, oh my gosh, if I stop this medication, I just know I'm not going to be able to sleep again. That anxiety alone can cause them to not sleep. And it's not because there's anything going on. It's because their anxiety is driving that. Yeah. So, you know, that's where, you know, your training as a psychologist, I guess, comes in over the MD prescriber. You know, two different fields.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is why at the beginning, I like to give folks the experience of improved sleep. Like, let's address whatever insomnia might be there. Because once folks start to have that experience of, I made a behavioral change and my sleep improved, and the medication was exactly the same, but I still got an improvement in my sleep by making a behavioral change, that starts to change your own self-efficacy, your own belief that, yeah, actually I can sleep, because of course you can sleep. We're made for sleep. You know, unless you have, you know, that one rare condition where you cannot sleep, we are all made for sleep. And I really want to kind of bolster that belief, that confidence that folks can sleep before we start kind of pulling away essentially those training wheels, that safety net that they have come to rely on, you know, potentially for weeks, months, or years.
Right, right. Do you ever have a case where you've got a patient who has been on one or more prescription medications for quite a long time? They come to you, they say, I want to get off, so here's what my plan is. I want to start to reduce the amount of prescription medication I'm taking, and I'll just go to the, you know, drugstore and I'll get over-the-counter things and I'll just use those instead. Mm-hmm. But tell me about that conversation.
I often try to keep folks from doing that, because essentially what you're doing is you're just kind of swapping one for the other, and, you know, you're still kind of allowing the belief to persist that your sleep comes from this external driver and it's not coming from you internally. So I have certainly had folks who say, okay, I'm going to switch off of, you know, this off of Xanax, which I'm taking as a sleep aid, which is not a sleep aid. And I'm going to try to switch over to Benadryl. And it's like, actually, no, here's some of the dangers of long-term use of Benadryl, of nightly use of Benadryl. We also know that that's not exactly a good or healthy thing. It's just a more accessible medication that you can go and you can buy, and it's a lot cheaper, and you don't have to go through a doctor to pick it up. So I try to dissuade folks from taking that route, and really trying to emphasize the fact that you can sleep and you can do this naturally. I do believe that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about when you have the patient who says, well, okay, so then I'm just going to have a glass of wine before bed?
Well, I think it depends on how soon before bed that glass of wine is happening. You know, I will just try, part of our role is just providing that psychoeducation, right? Of like, here's the effect that we know that alcohol has on sleep. It's really good at knocking you out. It's really bad at keeping you awake. It's actually going, or bad at keeping you asleep. You're going to have more wakefulness throughout the night with alcohol, especially with the higher quantities that you might use. Mm-hmm. So just providing that background of like, I know that it's so tempting for so many folks to want to switch from one agent to another, but most folks don't need to switch from one to another. They will actually do okay with just sleeping on their own if they have the right behavioral tools.
Right, and I guess that's what it is they've got to be able to build their confidence that they do have the ability to do it. You know, one of the other things that I work with patients on is, you know, there's realities of how our bodies function. And when you're talking to, like, for example, a postmenopausal woman, and she says, you know, I'm waking up a lot in the middle of the night now. And the reality is, based on the research and the facts that we have, that does happen. And there's not an easy answer to it. There's not some magic pill. There's not some magic thing to do. And it's unfortunate, you know, that we can't say, oh, well, just do this thing and it'll go away. So, you know, there are some things that happen to us based on our biology, you know, that make those things happen.
Yeah, it's not always just biology, right? You know, I just shared with you that I've moved from Tucson to Albuquerque, you know, within just the last couple of weeks. And in that process, I'm trying to sell a house. I'm trying to buy a house. I need to move. I need to reestablish myself in a new city. Of course, that's going to lead to some sleepless nights because you're planning, you're thinking. And I think that's one of those things that we forget. Like, as human beings, we're not always going to have great experiences 100% of the time. That's part of the experience of being human, is that, you know, sometimes we're going to have those nights where it's like, yeah, you know, I really wish I could be sleeping, but because I'm worried about something, because I've just had a death in my family, because, you know, I'm excited about taking my trip to Europe tomorrow, that my sleep is going to be disrupted. That's part of the experience of being human. I share with my patients all the time, you know, if we weren't meant to tolerate some degree of sleeplessness, many of us would never become parents. We'd never become doctors. Like, we are built to have a little bit of a few of those sleepless nights. Of course, not for long, long periods of time, but we are meant to tolerate that.
Right, right. Okay, so last question for you, because then we'll be running out of time, but I know more recently there's been a lot of interest in the news media and just in general about dementia, Alzheimer's, things like that. And as we've talked about how, you know, medications can lead to memory issues and a lot of confusion, right? So if someone is listening to this show and they've been taking medications and they decide, you know, I really want to look into getting off of all of my sleep meds. Mm-hmm. How do they have that conversation with their doctor? What's the best approach for them to take?
Yeah, I think not just going to your doctor and saying, I want to stop these medications, because I can bet that your doctor will be like, okay, let's stop you. We're going to gradually reduce the dosage of this medication. But talking to your doctor about like, hey, what can I do to kind of work with someone to reduce those medications, right? So looking for someone with our expertise, someone who's a behavioral sleep medicine provider who really works with folks who are trying to make that balance of, you know, having good sleep or improving their sleep while reducing these medications. There's lots of us. We do exist throughout the United States, throughout the world, but I recognize that it can be hard to kind of locate some of those folks. But there are websites, like I'm just thinking about behavioralsleep.org or, oh my goodness, is it the University of Pittsburgh that has... University of Pennsylvania that has the CBTI provider resource. So you can look on those lists and see if there's someone nearby. There's some really great apps that are out there. The CBTI Coach app, which is put out by the Department of Veterans Affairs, is free and does a lot of CBTI. It's not personalized to you, but it's got great recommendations. There are other apps that you can actually be prescribed to you by your doctor if you ask. And then there's lots of great books that are out there written by lots of behavioral sleep medicine experts that can be accessed. You know, I'm thinking about Manber and Carney's Quiet Your Mind and Get to Sleep, or the Insomnia Workbook. They're out there. They're very accessible. You can go to a local bookstore and you'd probably find them or order them online.
Great. Great. Those are great suggestions. I really appreciate that. We are out of time for this episode of Sleep Science Today. So, Dr. Rodriguez, I appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge with our audience. For those of you listening, please be sure to visit us at sleepsciencetoday.com. Sign up for our mailing list. You can find us on Instagram at Sleep Science Today. So come on back for future episodes. We want to help improve your sleep. Dr. Rodriguez, thank you, and you have a fantastic day.
Thank you. This is great.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, Sleep Science Today and sleep better tonight.